And we are back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. It's a very gray day in Los Angeles. It's also election day here. I know by the time you hear this episode, it won't be election day. But just know, we're living in this Sleepy Hollow version of reality right now, which feels a little appropriate.
I want to say that we'll know whether or not, you know, Rick Caruso becomes mayor of LA.
My hero. I'm so kidding.
By the time this airs. But I just want to point out some losers.
Sure.
Chris Pratt.
Oh, you don't say.
You suck.
You suck. Also, his long rambling explanation where he's like, I've been in LA a long time and this is the city I love and it's really fallen to shit. Girl, have you walked these streets? I've not seen you out.
Really pounding the pavement to get to those Jurassic Park auditions.
Yeah, right. Absolutely not, loser.
And Katy Perry.
Who had to show us the screen she was voting on with a smile on her face I've not seen since, like, Bob's Big Boy. And
doing a, like, Laverne and Shirley jump kick into the air outside the polling place, too, in one of the slides on her Instagram carousel. It's like, bitch, you've already stolen a home from nuns and killed one of them.
Also, I did not realize she was appropriating Laverne and Shirley culture. Now I'm livid. Because, by the way, there are some sitcom legends out there who are doing the work. Our friend Valerie Bertinelli, slaying with the content on Twitter. So this is officially a Valerie Bertinelli stands only podcast.
I think that I think Katy Perry is secretly a supervillain. The nun thing, not supporting Rick Caruso. Like, what's next?
I mean,
and whatever she did to Bonnie McKee.
Oh my God. Well, we'll get into that. And I hope the podcast community investigates that, frankly. Gotta love Bonnie McKee. I regret loving her Vegas show, which I do think is one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen live. I regret that she gave us a gay, disgusting Kid Choice Awards level gala performance that I enjoyed, because this upsets me.
Yeah. Basically, every celebrity who's come out of the woodwork to be like, Rick Caruso is great, it's extra maddening because they're all people who are like down for Obama, for Hillary, like, you know, for Biden. Like, we're supporting the blue. Always vote blue. But it's like, you know what? You can't just be a voter. You also have to be an informed voter.
Now, that seems like a huge ask. And I feel like you should... You're saying a lot there to people who... Don't do a lot of huge asks. You know what I'm saying?
The only person I like sort of whatever about is Gwyneth Paltrow, because who expects her to be on the right side of anything? She's not even on the right side of us needing her back on a set again instead of selling whatever she's selling at Goop. Like, we want you acting.
Yeah. No, she's only on the right side of a kitchen island, and I don't need to see how she makes an omelet anymore. I've seen it before.
But, anyway,
play Sylvia Plath again or something. Yes.
Famously loves kitchens, Sylvia Plath.
One of the great kitchen acting performances. Yeah.
You give her some comment and she'll really dig into the back of that oven.
Yeah, right? Good Lord.
It's always weird recording this on election day, but at least it's not like actual presidential election day. The time she recorded those was dark.
Yes. Anyway, I swear we won't be getting into this any other time during the episode. So,
no, we'll talk about other depressing things.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm not a fan of this episode in the onset. I'm just going to throw it out there.
We are going to talk about other celebrities we are disappointed with this week, including Drake and Rihanna.
Vastly different reasons, but both same stench of awful of what of bewilderment.
And it helps that their recent music outputs are bad too, so
that, you're right, is deeply helpful. You're right. Yeah. Like, at least there's,
if
not
Lift
like
Me Up was a bop, I'd be like, Rihanna,
yeah.
I'm so angry. But I have not listened to that song since.
No, it did not lift me. I'm firmly on the ground.
And we are also going to discuss Selena Gomez's new documentary. And, you know, Aaron Carter did pass away too. So we're also going to discuss his life.
I was going to say about him, obviously, I heard that immediately sad. I was piecing together pieces of his life I remembered that all individually, just as it, my first instinct, all seemed tragic. But I was in a house full of people in Palm Springs, and I have to tell you, fully half the house did not know who Aaron Carter was. And I,
disgusting.
That was even more disorienting. Yeah. I can't put on a clinic right now. I can't like tell you what Aaron's party was or that you should have come to get it.
There were two parties that every kid wanted to go to.
That's right.
Aaron's party and an S Club party.
Oh, please. S Club, the endorphins coming off that group. It's like A-teens. I was soaring.
Bouncing off the wall, you mean?
Yes.
Or bouncing off the ceilings.
More accurately, yes.
Was the song Bouncing Off the Ceilings or Bouncing Off the Wall?
Bouncing Off the Ceiling, upside down.
Okay. Wow. Just like Bed Knobs and Broomsticks?
And also Lionel Richie. That's more dancing on the ceiling, but I feel the vibe is similar.
Yeah. Do you think the A-teens are mad that Mamma Mia stole their ABBA gig?
Their whole thing. And that ABBA stole their ABBA gig. It's like now we have ABBA again. Yeah.
Who will remember the A-teens? Well, the A-adults now. So.
Wow. A-adults? I'm not saying I'm not at that concert, but you know, there's a stink on it.
Yeah. And
it's the smell of beige lipstick, which is what ABBA gives us.
In better news, we are delighted to have Jake Lacy as our guest this week, who is wonderfully delightful.
Thoughtful, cool person. I bring this up in the interview, but he plays this disgusting character on this show called A Friend of the Family. It's based on a real story. This man who is a neighbor to a family of three girls kidnaps one of the girls, brainwashes her to a certain degree, and he is perfectly cast as this upstanding seeming 70s guy, and it really reminds me of Dan White, who the guy who killed Harvey Milk and George Moscone. It really has the vibe of, I just want everybody in the town to eat ice cream with me, and then inside I'm a broken sociopath.
That's interesting, because you know what, I would not think of him and Josh Brolin having a lot in common, because when I think of Dan White, I think of the movie Milk.
Right. Yes. Lots of good performances in Milk.
I don't think I've looked up much of like what Dan White looked like, but oh, you know what? He looks very Jake Lacy.
Yes, totally. No, in the times of Harvey Milk, the feel is similar.
You know who is very good in Milk, by the way?
Here comes James Franco.
I mean, yes. James Franco is amazing in it. R.I.P. but... I was going to say, Dennis O'Hare.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, Sean Penn is frigging spectacular in that movie. Absolutely nailed it. But.
Alison Pill, too. Also, remember, she was on Keep It.
Right. Wasn't she talking a lot about like physics or something? It was a crazy interview. Cool person, weirdo actor.
Yeah.
Then I was like, remember when you were in a play with Glenda Jackson? Was she scary? And she goes, yes. That was awesome.
Yeah. Cause I think she was in, cause she was in the Alex Garland series Devs, which never came back.
Yes. So. Right. That was Nick Offerman. Correct. Okay. Moving on.
Anyway, we've got more Keep It coming up for you. So we'll be right back. So Drake lost his damn mind on his and 21 Savage's new album, Her Loss. Not just firing shots, but seemingly just closing his eyes and shooting at random. The line that's getting the most attention, obviously, is when he references Megan Thee Stallion and her shooting from that short Canadian Tory Lanez. Okay, I couldn't remember his name. I'm like, there's a lot of short Canadians out there, you know?
Right. You don't want people to think Michael J. Fox did it, right?
I can see Michael J. Fox and Megan Thee Stallion having some beef.
But settling it amicably, yeah. Tracy Pollan acts as intermediary, yes.
He said, this bitch lie about getting shots, but she's still a stallion. Great.
Which, just a brilliant lyric. Oh, my God. One for the ages. Did Cole Porter write that one? No? Okay.
And also, sidebar, Serena, your husband, a groupie, about Alex Ohanian, which, of course he is.
Right, who's not a fan.
I would be happy to be Serena's groupie. You're her groupie, bitch.
No kidding. What exactly is the relationship they're supposed to have? Don't be a fan of hers at all, or notice her legacy, or anything.
Yeah, so I was obviously disappointed because I think Keep It listeners know I am a on-the-record Drake fan.
Sure.
Our male Taylor Swift, as it were.
I mean, that really sets my brain on fire. No idea what that could mean, but all right.
I think we've discussed this before. I think they both have an obsession with charts, for one. I feel like they both sort of use their relationships with other people to propel them forward in like pop culture. Yeah, I think they're like...
They're building intrigue around their relationships, yeah.
Yeah, and they both sort of like... They both like sort of write about their relationships too in an interesting way. And I think that they also both know like how the internet will respond to them and anticipate it. You know, like the one thing about Drake is that like that we used to always talk about is the fact that he always knew that people were going to meme him and make fun of him, which is why we started getting things like Hotline Bling, where he was just creating a meme as a video before people could meme it, you know?
Right,
I think that
he
gets there. And interesting enough, it reminds me, this new album, Her Loss, which I'll discuss in a moment, reminds me of just sort of Taylor's response post-Reputation, because he makes reference to the fact that people weren't really feeling his last album, Honestly, Nevermind, which, you know, was more of the like house and dance album, which came out right before Renaissance. And so like people paid it dust. So for a couple really good songs on it. And I feel like this album is just sort of like back to basics Drake, because he's like, okay, people didn't want me to do something different. And that's very much how Taylor feels when, you know, something of hers isn't like if this album wasn't as successful as it was, the current one, Midnight's all on the charts, she would go back to doing Folklore or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's back to basics almost. That's all it is. I felt like listening to this album, I was listening to largely tracks that could have come out 7 years ago.
Yeah. He sort of hasn't progressed as an artist, and it's sort of now just highlighting the fact that he's, I don't know, an asshole.
Yeah. What is with that Megan Thee Stallion line? I mean, just what is, why state it? Why weigh in? It's now a couple years old, right? It's just a strange journey to take. I know you're saying like people, he wants to stir people up, probably get people interested, but just gross. I can't stand it.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. And it made me like really uncomfortable even wanting to like listen to the album. Luckily, it's bad. So, and 21 Savage is better than him on the album. And 21 Savage is weirdly relegated to like a featured artist on it, so whatever.
Yeah. I'm too busy with other albums right now anyway. Do you know whose new album I like? Are you ready for this? Phoenix. So good.
You listening to Phoenix?
Can you believe it? I couldn't believe it. Somebody put it on their Insta story and I was like, I'm gonna give it a shot. Wow, I'm into it.
Okay.
Wait, do you have Barbra Streisand live at the Bon Soir? Let's talk about beats. Let's talk about beats.
Listen to it. Who was tweeting about Barbra Streisand the other? Oh, Shirley Ralph was like tweeting about Barbra Streisand live at the Bon Soir. So,
oh yes, if people don't know, in the early '60s, at the same time she was in I Can Get It for You Wholesale, her breakthrough Broadway performance, Barbra Streisand was doing this nightclub act at the Bonsoir. It went on for a long time, kept getting extended. And initially, they recorded her at the Bonsoir as for an album, and then instead did a studio recording of several tracks she does during this live recording, and that became the first Barbra Streisand album, which won the Grammy for Album of the Year, and that was the beginning of her recording career. So now they have instead taken these early recordings where she's barely 20 years old and released it as her 57th album. Extremely strange. It's like suddenly getting an album of, like, here's the first time the Beatles were in a garage playing with each other. It just is, it's like, it's crazy that we're suddenly getting it now. And it is
I think I've seen that video on XTube before. So.
Oh, sure. XTube, wow. You in your late 60s? Yeah. Let's teach you a Twitter account.
I actually love when people make an XTube reference, because when I try to think about the interface for that website, it's so confusing.
It's one of those sites where there's 100,000 buttons everywhere and things are popping up at you, right?
And there's a lot of like images on the screen too. I'm like, I don't need to see all these random straight sex scenes happening in the corner as I'm looking for whoever.
Those weird porn sites where it's like, you can win 50 coins if you click on this video. You know, just like lots of bullshit going on. Anyway, honestly, if you want to be reacquainted with the fact that Barbra Streisand is a fucking freak, these vocals are just unbelievable. It's like, I feel like she's one of the few people ever who, as much as she wields power as a vocalist, dynamic control of dynamics and pitch and basic things that make a singer great, the way she throws around character is fucking crazy. We have nobody like that now who, the minute they sing and like there's like a comic aside in the song or like a triumphant emotional moment, she really is like zooming between the extremes of being a person. And it's just so amazing. And you can hear that you're about to meet a brilliant actress in addition to a huge singing star when you listen to this album. I know this is a conversation about Drake, but guys, this is the real fucking deal.
Well, let me tell you something, you know, two iconic Jewish singers. So
Okay. You know what you're giving right now when RBG would be like, Biggie Smalls and I are both from Brooklyn. Yeah. How about that?
Okay, listen, we are combating anti-Semitism with Drake and Barbra this week, okay?
I think we're helping, yes.
Yeah. Drake's helping.
Right.
speaking of albums that we haven't brought up yet, we talked about Carly Rae Jepsen's, but we have not talked about Tuve Lo's.
Which... I'm still getting over the indignity of having to say the words Tuve Lo. I mean, it just sounds like something a chimney sweep says to get in your house. But
it sounds like just something that like a German child is saying to you as they've stolen your candy.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a menacing child, the Germans. Yeah, yeah.
That's what Augustus Gloop was wailing as he drowned in the chocolate river.
Those are his last words, yes. Before Roald Dahl went on killing kids or whatever. Actually, in the book Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, at the end, all the kids wave to Charlie as he's in the air. So they officially are supposed to be alive, which surprises me because it seems like Roald Dahl has the heart of somebody who, you know, kills kids.
Those are ghosts. they're not alive, Lewis.
And then Charlie in the Great Glass, makes sense.
Charlie in the Great Glass Elevator, it's him going to heaven.
Yeah. There's a lot that's fucked up in that book, too. When, like, suddenly the grandparents are minus 20 years old or whatever. Don't bend time. Please don't bend time.
But Dirt Femme is a really good album.
I will get on that. I'm surprised I haven't, actually. I guess I'm still absorbed in the Carly Rae album, which is continues to grow on me. At first, I thought it was a little...
cloying?
Palm Springs by the Pool, which I like. But then also...
That's like your
shrooms.
Personality.
Yes, but except I need there to be something active in the hanging out by the pool, like we're dancing by the pool, as opposed to in a coma by the pool.
That's fair. I would also say that I have gotten into the Arctic Monkeys' new album. You know,
that's always been your brand, though. I'm not surprised about that.
Yeah, but they've entered their lounge singer era.
Meaning what?
Meaning that like. The last album was very sort of like 50s, like, you know, Ocean's 11, Rat Pack, throwbacky. And this this album is less kitschy than the other one. Like, it's not like it's really like, oh, we're making like an album like this, but they're less in their like sort of like hard rock era, you know, like they're doing less of like Sheffield like grunge like they were doing like that we know them from, like, you know, like I Bet You Look Good on the Dance Floor, you know, like that kind of music. They're now like they're relaxed, and it's not, I mean, Alex Turner has a great fucking voice, so he sounds good singing anything, but it's interesting to see them go from like hard sort of like dance rock to this. And I love that in interviews too, they're sort of like, you know, that Jay-Z line, you know, sort of like, buy my old albums if you want that old shit, because like he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, like, I'm sort of intrigued by the lounge singer angle. I just think we need greater Robert Goulet literacy in this country altogether. People last remember him as a Will Ferrell character, and I think there's some awesome vocals going on there. Yeah, just anything Bacharachian, you know, I wish people still cared about that stuff.
Well, we don't care about Burt Bacharach anymore because no one's watching American Idol, Lewis. And
oh, that's right. Can famously, you what American Burt Idol Bacharach would get away with? Night? Yeah. I don't want to be clear. This was a sensation television show, maybe among the 10 biggest shows of all time, and they would throw a Bacharach night. I mean, it just really boggles the mind. And then you would see someone give like a C-minus performance of Not Walk On By, Kelly nailed that, but a C-minus performance of Anyone Who Had a Heart, or a song that would never be on the radio now.
Or we got a lot of renditions of I Say a Little Prayer.
Right. And as you know, I prefer the Dion version to the Aretha version, which I think could make me neocon, but that's how I feel.
You know what? Dion put her...
God, let's hear what she put in it.
I couldn't even figure
her whole
out
war wussy. Yeah, right.
I couldn't even figure out a way to get there. Yeah. She put her whole Lion, Witch, and Warwick up in that rendition.
Her whole Psychic Friends network was up in that. Yeah.
I love that rendition. Underrated Dionne Warwick, to be honest. I mean, I know that we love her. We love her Twitter stuff and the Psychic Friends Network, but I feel like not enough attention is paid to her early singing days, which are, like, she is fucking amazing albums.
She's an immaculate voice that it's like, it's never pushing, but it's very emotional. It's a voice that draws you in. It's not like exploding at you. She's not a belter. Closer to someone like a Karen Carpenter than an Aretha, for example. But,
I'd watch Todd Haynes's Dionne Warwick film.
Which she could still contribute to. I'm sure she has I think she has a really strong working memory of all those times too. She has given some spectacular interviews.
Yeah.
By the way, this reminds me, while we're on this topic, you just brought up Todd Haynes. Do you know what I've been in denial about? And I think I'm ready to accept. Ryan Murphy should do a Madonna series. I think he would be reverent to the things that would be exciting to watch in a TV show, and I think it could be his crowning moment. I know people are like a little ODing on him, you know, over the past whatever 7 years. We've gotten so much content from him, and you know, sometimes it's the people versus OJ, and sometimes it's the politician. But I think he
honestly,
would
I agree.
Slay it. I think he would slay it.
Yeah, I think he'd be good. I think he would. I think he'd pay. Yes, you're right. The right amount of reverence to her.
And also being critical and also like making it dimensional, because he's somebody who, you know, is like an obsessed fan, you know?
Yeah. Also, they're both crazy. So.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It works out together.
I thought you, when you were talking about Todd Haynes, I thought you were about to be like, you know what? I hate Far From Heaven.
I actually think Far From Heaven is more 3 stars than 4 stars, but the performances are great. And also, why didn't Dennis Haysbert get like 20,000 roles of that size afterwards? It upsets me.
Racism.
You shouldn't tone the word racism more often. Racism.
Actually, I think it was that plus he was stuck on 24.
Oh, right. He was in a prison, and Alicia Cuthbert was the warden.
I mean, speaking of Fox series that were massive, right? Like,
yeah,
the ratings were like big. American Idol 24. I agree with it being 3 stars, though. I think, obviously, All That Heaven Allows is better, the Cirque film.
Yes, right.
And better in that trilogy is the Fassbender film, Ali, Fear Eats the Soul.
Now, speaking of fear eating the soul, Rihanna, what's going on there?
Okay, so Rihanna, you know, has her Savage X Fenty drop. She loves this fashion show that's become like a production. Every year, it drops on Amazon. And every year, I hang out at a gay's place and it plays in the background. It's mm-hmm. like a perfect like video to put on to like look up and watch periodically.
Yeah. While I'm facing the other direction and eating cashews. Yes.
Yes. But she put Johnny Depp in this one. And I want to say, first of all, I don't care what your thoughts are on Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard. Who wants to see that man in underwear?
No, absolutely the fuck not. Nor I don't want to see his facial expression as he walks by us either. There's just, I mean, it feels like the Rihanna version of voting for Rick Russo. I mean, it's just, what?
She probably
Why?
Did.
Right, I guess.
She probably just, did. I always forget that she's sort of, I think Ray Saudi on Twitter said that we always forget that Rihanna is kind of a bozo.
Bozo, very underrated insult.
Just because she does a lot of very silly things, like supporting Sean King, you know? She'll do things like that, and you're like, okay, we get it.
Right, but you're too busy standing, so, you know, you don't stick with that thought. You don't stay on that thought. Yeah. Also, there's just something about, like, Johnny Depp in general where it's like, haven't you seen the internet has treated this whole thing disgustingly? I mean, I don't mean to say people standing up for like domestic abuse victims is disgusting. I absolutely do not mean to say that. But like Johnny Depp has proven that he is disgusting. We have the text to prove it. We have the text. There's no denying that he is vile. There's no denying that he was awful to her. Anyway. Regardless of what you think of her, which that's a whole other can of worms, but I don't know. This just deflated my entire morning when I heard this.
Yeah, and it's... There's nothing about him that's even hot right now.
No, no. And actually, people are clowning on him and, like, you know, saying, oh, it looks like Jack Sparrow at your aunt's garage sale or whatever, things like that.
But Jack Sparrow was attractive.
That's right.
In the first film, Jack Sparrow was attractive. Like... Now, he looks like Jack Sparrow left on an island, you know, for 20 years with no food or water. He looks like Caliban in The Tempest.
Yeah, he looks like Caliban receiving his Kennedy Center honors 50 years later. I mean, what else is there to say about it? Come on, Rihanna. Come on. No one wants to see that. Also, it's like she's putting him alongside like Simu Liu. Like, you think he's wanting this to fly? Who else? Is it Cheryl Lee Ralph, too?
Yeah, like sexy people, okay?
Yeah.
it's also wild that, like, he's one of those people who you can't even tweet his name now without being swarmed.
I can't think of another person who is that, who conjures that kind of reaction other than Michael Jackson. It is that level. Yeah. And to call that a reaction is... understating it wildly. I just want to also say about Michael Jackson quickly, do you know what is so funny? When somebody is dancing at like a party and they even 1% dance like Michael Jackson, it's like, stop. Like, there's like a jerky thing they do. It's so funny. It's like the funniest thing you can do. It's so intense and like antisocial kind of. Yeah.
All right. Well, those are the celebs who've disappointed us.
Yeah.
This week. Rough. Anybody else you're disappointed with?
Yeah, come with me to the Bone Soir. It's fun there.
All right, when we're back, we're joined by Jake Lacey.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You know him from roles in The Office, Girls, High Fidelity, where he plays a perfectly nice person. And then you know him from roles like Carol, The White Lotus, and now A Friend of the Family, where he's an asshole. So we're delighted to welcome to Keep It, Jake Lacy, to find out which one are you?
Yeah, solve this for us.
You know, I don't think I'm as extreme as Shane and the White Lotus, certainly not Robert Birchtold in A Friend of the Family, but probably Fran on Girls is honestly like closer in retrospect, maybe in hindsight, than I want it to be, you know?
I want to say, by the way, that Jake Lacy has arrived and he's wearing a Braves cap. That's a Braves cap, right? I'm not an expert on this matter. Okay, great.
Boston Red Sox.
Oh, Boston. Okay, moving on. It's Boston. And a sweatshirt. And he. You seem like a quintessential Jake Lacy character right now. I just want to, which is, you live in the roles, so to speak. Not the Birchtold one, but the other ones.
I love style. I love like menswear, but I also feel like at my truest sense, like this is just me, you know? And like anytime I put on too much of a thing, it's like when a little kid like wears their dad's like work clothes, you know, I look like I've put on a thing to go like, oh boy, that normal, just average guy thinks he's really something, huh? So ultimately, as much as I go like, oh, this double-breasted cashmere, love it, like live for it. Almost every day, jeans and a t-shirt. I went into this wonderful store, Drake's, years ago, and I was like, I'm going to get this tie and this Oxford. And I'd been in there a handful of times, and the kid who was working the counter was like, I'll sell you these, but I've never seen you walk in this store in an Oxford and a tie. Like, every time you're in here, it's a hoodie and jeans. Like, I'll gladly sell you those, but I don't know what what you're doing outside of here where these are of use.
This guy was onto your denial. He's like, yeah, go ahead and own this shirt. Who knows if you'll ever see it again in your closet. Yeah.
I was like the most seen by some guy who had seen me twice in this store. I was like, oh, that cuts deep. Thanks.
Well, you know, you're Boston. You look ready to host Pod Save America is what you actually look like. You're ready.
Yes.
So
me, Favreau,
that's great.
Ready to rock.
Also, you live in Connecticut now, don't you?
Yes. Well, I don't know if it'll stick, but we've been here for a year. We lived in Brooklyn for a long time and got a couple of kids, and it was like, oh, it'd be nice to have a little more, like a backyard, you know, like room to roam. And I don't know that we'll stay where we are, but it is nice to, the lifestyle is very nice.
So I have two friends who live in Connecticut. They left New York to do that too. And I'm just, you already are presenting your Boston identity, and then you had a Brooklyn identity. So like, what is Connecticut like for you?
Well, I used to rep like a Sox cap in the city and get no love, you know, understandably, because like if you wear a Yankees cap in Boston, people just light you up as quick and as hard as they can, you know? So I was like, I know I'm, you know, like a cop on a platform one time. I walked by and he was like, Boston sucks. And I was like, ah, right. Like good stuff. and just like stone face, you know, like there was no kind of camaraderie and a mutual hatred. He was just like, move it along. So always repping the Sox. And my wife, I think, says it the best, where she's like, I want to be the most basic person I know. Like, I don't want more basic friends than what I've got. You know what I mean? Like, so in Brooklyn, I felt like that was possible, you know, where I was like, I'm the preppiest, most average basic dude I know. That's fine. You know, and you go out to the burbs, it's a little different. You know, you're like, oh, we're all basic white guys out here. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Bummer. It's the Victory Project. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We're trying to sort out, like, can we vibe here for the next 40 years? Or is this a nice, like, stopping off point? And then we figure out, you know, like, we still go into Brooklyn all the time. Like, I still get my kid's hair cut in there. You know what I mean? Like, I just got, you know, too attached.
Now, wait, speaking of the suburbs, I guess this would technically be a suburb. It's very Americana where Friend of the Family is set. But in the show, if people don't know, it's a Peacock show where you play a neighbor to a family of Colin Hanks and Anna Paquin are the parents in that family, and they have a daughter whom you kidnap. And there's an entire series of ways you manipulate her, and it's really shocking to watch. And it's also based on a real story. But something that stands out to me about your performance is there is something extremely familiar in the suburban creepiness of your character. I was saying beforehand, I wanted to tell Ira, I didn't get a chance to. You remind me of Dan White from Milk, the guy who kills Harvey Milk and George Moscone. And there's something, I don't know, there's something so specific about like a guy who thinks on some level he is upstanding as he does all these horrible things. And I was wondering what went into becoming this real life person.
You know, we talked a lot about his place in that community, and that in this era and in the circumstances of, you know, the I think innocence and this kind of trusting nature and naivete that came with being in Idaho in the 70s in this LDS community, and that if you're like the new guy in town, you can kind of define your place in this community if you are of a certain mindset. And that I would continually frame it along with Rebecca Gregg, who did the costumes, just wonderful, wonderful person to work with, that he thinks he's like Steve McQueen. He thinks he's like Danny Ocean, you know, is like, he's living this other life that he's like, I've been to the outside and I've come back and you don't even know what's out there. You know, that he's this kind of, in his mind, is like a rogue, badass, leading man kind of thing. And that if you tell enough people that's who you are, some of them believe you. And so he is both playing within the framework of what's acceptable as a Mormon father and a member of the church and a member of the community and a husband. And then at the same time is also in the way he dresses and the way he carries himself, kind of letting you know, like, I'm other. I'm out here on the fringe. I'm exciting. I'm different. I've seen the world. And that starts to create a space where as he does things that are, you know, uncomfortable for others, he's in a community where people don't speak up and say something and say, like, why are you in my yard raking my leaves? You know, that he frames that as like, I'm a good neighbor, I'm helping out. And the reality is that he's like breaking down boundaries so that when he breaks down horrific boundaries, it's normalized, you know, or that it's normalized enough that people don't say anything. So I think that, you know, that's a rambling, winding answer, but that was the way in, I think, toward creating, a space where he could, take what he wanted and sort of flourish under the radar, in an otherwise normal seeming town and community. I hope that answers the question.
It does.
Yes. Oh, definitely. I'm in it. Yes.
Well, I mean, what I actually think is sort of the similarity between that and even The White Lotus is about they're both observations of sort of societal norms. And when you think of like true crime too, and growing up in the suburbs, as you know, Lewis and I both did. Well, I grew up more in the city in Milwaukee, but the sort of norms that you have, and when you watch things like this, like how do people get away with things like this? There's this idea that, you know, everyone is in it their sort of correct place, you know, and no one is crazy like in a place like this. If you're in an enclave, like they're afraid of the big city, people in that time would be, but they think that the suburbs, you know, like you're safe here. And then I think of like White Lotus, like I hated your character in parts, but I also agreed with your character in parts because there was sort of this idea that you should just go along with being lied to or things being wrong with like a hotel or something on vacation. But then you breaking from the norm and being like, wait, no, some of this is crazy and I should be angry, you know?
Yeah, in terms of The White Lotus, like I think what Mike does so brilliantly is that hopefully you see what everyone wants and what they're coming up against and in some ways can side with their needs and wants, but not with how they carry themselves and the things they do. You know, like when we were doing press for White Lotus, I feel like people would get a little like, when I'd be like, you know, Shane's right. He paid for a room and he didn't get it. You know, people were like, oh, that's sort of fun. And I was like, no, for real. Like that dude paid for something. And then a guy lied to him about it. And when he called him on it, the guy lied again. You know, like he then goes crazy in terms of obsessing over it instead of like enjoying his honeymoon. But at the core of it, like that guy paid an extreme amount of money for a very nice thing and then didn't get it. And if I had paid, I mean, like in reality, I asked Dave Renat, who was the creative producer on White Lotus. And I was like, when we were filming at the hotel, I was like, what do these rooms go for in reality? And he was like, this suite's like $20,000 a night. I was like, if I had paid $20,000 a night for 10 days and someone was like, whoops, I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? You know what I mean? Like, no, you could buy a house for the amount that I'm spending here for a week. Like, give me the thing I paid for, man. You know?
I mean, most people don't admit how angry they get over $20, a minor inconvenience. So I get it. I got it. You know, I think, you know, people asking you that question would sort of be like, they don't want to admit times that they've gotten angry.
I think in a way it's like the flip side is true with a friend of the family, in which, you know, the whole point from certainly Jan's perspective, I mean, real life Jan's perspective is saying like silence is the thing that perpetuates this. The fact that multiple people along the way, and as you see, I think by episode 7, you realize or come to find out that the church knew, you know, the Birchtold had come to that Birchtold had attempted to be inappropriate and intimate with Nicole, the daughter of the bishop, and she had called him on it. And when he was confronted, Birchtold admitted that he had this, what he termed an affliction, and was working on it, and then asked for repentance. And because the tenets of the religion are such that forgiveness and repentance are foundational elements, they didn't report it to the police or tell the Birchtold, the Brobergs, even though he'd already been assaulting Jan and admitted to it. This is before the first abduction. And so years later now, it comes out that they knew. And that story point isn't to point the finger at the church as much as to say, like, this shame and discomfort and silence is the thing that allows predators to continue to prey on victims, on families, on children. So in terms of like the sort of not just the discomfort in saying something, you know, on the extreme ends, I didn't get the room I wanted, and on an actual like life or death trauma kind of level, not saying something when you know something's wrong, you know, or when your gut tells you like, that's not right. That person, you know, touches people for too long. That hug's too long. The way they look, the thing, you know, it's like the way they look at a child, the way it's like, say something, you know? And Jan, you know, real life current Jan is like, it's really hard to have those discussions when it's someone close to you, which it usually is, because no one wants to put grandpa in jail. You know, it's like the term that she says. And I'm like, yeah, it's easy to go like, the man lurking in the shadows, put him away. But when you go like, my favorite softball coach, my favorite math teacher, my neighbor, you know, that's a really hard thing to do.
I think something that's interesting about you is I feel, and Ira indicated this, but your characters, I find often have big scenes where they express the indignity they're in, including like White Lotus, even this current character, even though he's a big manipulator. I feel like you're the kind of person who could watch something you're not in and be like, oh, that's a role I could have done. Are you constantly watching things and thinking, oh, that's a Jake Lacy role? Because I think even I could do that.
But I'm like getting a hold of my reps and being like, I'm sorry. What? Yeah. What's it going to take, guys? that's funny. The only times that I feel that way is when I've auditioned for something and I don't get it. And then I see someone, you know, who got it and either go like, wow, that was 100% the right call, or, you know, have a little like fire of like, come on, I want to get in there. I would have loved that. Like, I mean, the most recent example that I can really think of is like before they made The Bear, you know, before it was cast, like that script was out there and it was sent my way, not as an offer, like just to go like, hey, you're probably too old for this and probably not the right type, but it's out there. And if you want us to reach out to the creatives and see if they want to set up a meeting. And I read it and I was like, oh man, like I'm not right for this, but this is so great. Like, I would love to meet on this. And then before that could even happen, Jeremy was cast. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, that's perfect. That's so good. Like, that guy is great and he's exactly right for this. And I can't wait to see what he does with it. And, you know, that's a wonderful feeling to like think material is good and then know enough of myself to go like, I'm not the guy for that. You know, like there's also times where like, you know, if you're lucky or if I'm lucky, an offer for something or, you know, and it's like, he's intimidating just by stepping into the room. You're like, no, like work, you know, the reason that like maybe this Shane works or a friend of the family is that like, you know, just look like a basic bro. And then whether that's that, like, I'm actually a entitled douche or, you know, manipulative pedophile who's using that kind of seemingly ho-hum blandness to my advantage, that ends up being more my sweet spot than like, whoa, look out, this guy's gonna crack skulls, you know, like just you come to know what your strength is or kind of where you can fit in a way. I watched Bull Durham recently and I was let's remake Bull Durham. Like, I'd like to be the Costner role 5 years from now. You know what I mean? Like, it just, a lot of the Costner stuff, I'm like, I'd like to do that. I'd like to do Field of Dreams. I'd like to do, you know, like, I like what's going on there. How do I do that?
Wow, that's an awesome instinct to be like, first of all, I love Susan and Bull Durham. Great performance. But second, but you're right. Those are kind of movies that are like, that up till like even 10 years ago, I feel like everybody knew. And now I feel like you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who knows Bull Durham really well.
It's on Delta. I almost watched it on my flight back to LA, but I watched Days of Thunder instead because I love Tom Cruise. But Bull Durham is a kind of like the Kevin Costner movie archetype is also a thing that's not around anymore.
I feel like it's almost too easygoing. You know, like he as a presence is wonderful. And, you know, like, man, I don't know how to explain it. Like in Field of Dreams, when he goes into the feed store and he asks the other farmers, like, he goes, you ever hear voices out there? And they go, you hearing voices, Ray? And he's like, no. Like he plays it so easy and grounded and kind of gentle in a way that you get to kind of go along with him on the story. Now I feel like the expectation is for that to be a bit, you know, for it to be kind of geared up or to be like darker than it is. But there's this kind of gentle, I mean, in that case, literally Midwestern, like, story and another baseball movie, but like passion for the beauty of the game of baseball. Yeah, I don't know if that exists now or if it could exist, like if there'd be an audience for it other than, for me, it's like a nostalgia factor to go like, turn back the clock. Let me live in 1991 for a minute. And I'll get back to, will democracy survive?
No. I mean, that character isn't even really a lead, I would say, in like TV so much anymore. It sort of fits into your roles, I would say. You know, you're opposite a lot of really great women. You know,
yes.
Lena Dunham, Zoe Kravitz. You know, it's
Mary Kay Place.
You.
Yes,
yeah, mm-hmm. I loved you in High Fidelity. You know, and like even in Girls, I remember being like, I want this relationship to work out. You know, and I feel like, I don't know, like Nora Ephron probably would have enjoyed casting you.
Oh man.
I think you'd be great in like Lucky Numbers. If you remember that movie.
Yes, I do. Yes. I'll take it. My friend Steve Zahn from White Lotus had worked with her and he was like, she was incredible. She was the best, you know? Well, I'll let him tell that story. But yeah, I would have loved that. Yes.
Looking back over some of your movie roles, first of all, being the Ricardos, there's Carol, there's Diane, which a movie more people need to watch, which stars Mary Kay Place as a mother kind of on the brink, and you're her son who is not doing well at all. But yeah. Do you have a favorite kind of moment acting alongside these, like the Titanic female performances, like often getting read the riot act in them, in fact?
You know, there's a scene in Diane, that's, you know, close to home for me. And, I'm at a diner at a little kind of hometown cafe with Mary Kay. And, I haven't seen her since I got cleaned up. I've just kind of gone off the radar for a bit and meet up with her. And Kent Jones, who wrote and directed that, had written a lovely piece there, you know, in the this kind of eating scene. And I was like, hey man, can we do one where I'll keep some of this and also kind of like move it around a little. And he was like, have like what's written, that's fine. And there's just like, Mary Kay is so wonderful, and she's like such a generous person to be with, you know, acting opposite and to spend time with, and just getting to say, like, I think I say something about like, it's just really raw. It just really hurts, Mom. You know, and like this the kind of like frayed feeling when you're coming out of a life of like active addiction and starting to like the clouds, the fog starts to shake a little and you start to kind of see and feel life again. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lot to be present to things. That scene, you know, and she was so right there, you know what I mean? Like she was just entirely, it's so rare that you really, really get to be like with a person like that, acting. It was wonderful. Yeah, so that one like means a lot to me.
You both are really great in that, and I would say like it's nice to see her in a dramatic role like that too. I feel like I would be on set constantly asking her about Private Benjamin, which I think is one of my top 10 movies. Unfortunately,
you know, he and Mary Kay had, you know, he'd admired her for years and years, and then they were like judges at the Amherst Film Fest or something, you know, the Berkshire Film Festival, and they did it one year, and then the next year they were both back there, and he's so lovely, and he was like, you know, Mary Kay, I wrote a script for you. Could I give it to you? You know? And he's a titan in his own right. And she was like, absolutely, you know? And it's just so wonderful that someone like her, who is a fantastic actor and has sort of had these supporting roles and every time is incredible, for someone like Kent to go like, I wrote this for you. I've seen what you can do, and I don't know if like the world has gotten to see that. And I have this very personal story, and we like find the middle together, you know? Just so cool. I think it's so wonderful to go like, I don't know. People write things for Kevin Hart. I wrote this for you. You know what I mean? Like, you're the biggest star in the world. Would you want to do it? You know? Dwayne Johnson, I wrote this for you. But like, I don't think that people like knock on an actress over the age of 60 and say, hey, I've got this thing where I'd like you to lead the story. Like, I don't think that happens. And man, it wasn't until I saw the movie that I was like, oh, I get it. I felt like even making it, I was like, what am I a part of here? What is this going to be? And then seeing it was like, oh my God, Kent, this is fantastic.
Yes, small but very existential movie, and memorable to everybody who's seen it. I also just want to shout out that Mary Kay Place was amazing as the mother on Lady Dynamite, the Maria Bamford Netflix show. Let me throw that out there.
Ula Jock, the mom on Kimmel, maybe? Maria did like a 5-minute set. She's never been on before. They have her on, and she basically is like, my mom passed away 6 months ago, and like it's remarkable. It's a like a perfect 5 minutes, and it's so entirely her. But it's just wonderful. If you haven't seen it, it's so great. I think she's remarkable. The special special, is that the other one?
Jake Lacy, thank you so much for being here. I will be thinking of you throughout The White Lotus, even though you are not on it this season. And also, I will be my bones will continue to be chilled as I watch you on this Peacock show.
Awesome. Thank you very much for watching and for having me on. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, very nice to meet you.
Shame.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Former child pop star Aaron Carter died tragically at the age of 34 this weekend, while Selena Gomez has already received some backlash over her documentary, My Mind and Me, which gives a vulnerable look into her own battles with mental health. So while the two former child stars have walked different paths, how has being thrust into the spotlight at such a young age affected the growth of young artists? And has it been worth it for so many of them? I mean, can talk about Aaron first. That was really just, it was a random gut punch because, you know, it's, I think that we're obviously, you know, used to older celebrities dying lately. And we discussed them on the show, but it feels like a while since someone young that we sort of grew up on died so tragically and randomly.
Yeah, you know? No, it almost feels like the child star into adulthood death thing is a trope of the past, like something that we would have seen in the 80s and 90s a lot, really. But he's one of these people where, like, you were aware he was estranged from his family, and also, like, he would do things like pop up on OnlyFans, and you would also see him, first of all, every time I went to Gay Pride in Chicago, he was performing there. So it's not like he wasn't sort of, like, giving it his all as a performer, you know, like,
well,
as
one
in, like,
thing about
working
gays,
gigging, etc. Yeah,
they do want candy,
right? No, he said, here's my demo, take me to market days. But at the same time, I struggle a lot with, like, his death is tragic, nobody should die at 34, but I guess as a Karen Carpenter stan who also died around the same age, something about me cringes at the at just looking at someone's short life as a tragedy. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Her brother, for example, Richard Carpenter, says, you know, she had a lot of joy in her life too. And I don't think he's papering over the hardship she faced either. You know, a part of me wants to say, like, let's find the ways that he enjoyed life and also celebrate those. I'm sure that was evident. Those ways were evident to us as he's somebody who, you know, was performing up until, you know, recently. So,
I think that's good way to look at that, because I mean, even the highlights that he had in his career are more than most people will achieve ever, you
right
know?
Totally,
just like being a global superstar, being on TV, having fans love you, the highlights in someone's life when they are a pop star, you know, despite the bad things that come with it, like those are really big highs, and that's why people do it.
Right, exactly. I was touched by what Hillary Duff posted. Also, Hillary Duff, good poster. I just in general have become more of a fan of hers thanks to things like Instagram.
Yeah, she writes really sweet things like that, but she's also, like, funny and has a sense of humor about herself.
Realistic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can she go manage Reese Witherspoon's social media?
Yeah, that gets tough for me occasionally. Also, remind me to bring up Reese Witherspoon during my Keep It this week. It doesn't involve her the way you think, but I can do that.
Okay.
But so anyway, Aaron Carter's death, extremely sad, but I hope we think about it dimensionally. What is going on with Selena Gomez right now?
Well, so this is a thing, too, where her documentary, My Mind and Me, was released on Apple. And Alex Kashizian, who directed Truth or Dare, directed
this. Yes, and also co-wrote W.E. What range with Madonna, anyway?
Which is wild because this film involves a controversy with W.E., but not the movie, the charity group.
Oh, right. Yes, not the same thing.
Yes, yeah. So, you know, he's just following pop stars around who, like the letters W and E.
You would think that would be a very niche circuit, but it's working out for him. Okay.
Oprah's next. Okay.
My favorite pop star, Oprah. Oh God.
We
TV. When she comes on at Glastonbury, my arms are in the air. Yeah.
Only because We TV is the enemy of oxygen.
Right.
But, here's the thing about this documentary. You talk about the highs that people get from being a pop star and then, you know, the dark effects of it. I watched this and I'm like, girl, get off the stage.
Yeah, stop.
For the large part of it, it really seems like she hates her job.
Which, by the way, I kind of stan, you know.
Of course,
You know, you know how every gay kind of stands the movie Vox Lux, even though it's pretty bad? You know, the thing we like is the rottenness of the stardom, you know, the thing in the stardom that's like, ugh, I have to deal with. It's not that you have to deal with fans. It's that you have to deal with delirious fans.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. What was that? That this old Madonna interview where she talked about how she liked when the fans came up, but the fans who came up were always the ugly ones. This is like some old interview of hers from the 90s.
Yeah, food for thought. It is kind of loser be. I just think it's loser behavior to go up to a celebrity in general most times, because I think it's an act of narcissism. It's, I see you all the time, but you never see me. So I'm taking advantage of this moment to get in your face and know, and let you know that this is a two-way relationship. Meanwhile, it's not. And also, if everybody did that, they would have no time to themselves. So I fucking hate that.
I would actually say that I like approaching people who, like, if you're a writer or, you know, like, so people who, like, would even, like, talk to us, right? Not to be meta about this.
Sure.
But if you approach, for the most part, like, people who listen to our show are smart. So when they approach us, they usually have something to say in response to something that we've said.
Oh, I would actually say that is always the case for me.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Which is far different from approaching a mega pop star, which... What do you have to say to Madonna besides,
no,
I dance in my bedroom to Borderline? Like, okay, millions of right, people no, do that.
No, I mean, what still buzzes in my head is when we had Peter Page on the show, and we asked him, you know, man, I bet people come up to you all the time, every day, and talk about how you were instrumental in their coming out. And he's like, literally every day. And that's a lot for one person to take. You know, it's like, why are we, it's like, You're putting a burden on them, you know, like, handle my trauma, basically, you know. And in the case of someone like Madonna, I remember I had a friend once who was like, well, I wouldn't go up to a celebrity, but if I saw Madonna, I would have to. Faggot, why? Does she need to meet one more gay person? No. No.
I think that reminds me of something I tweeted when Angela Lansbury died. I was just like... Because everyone's, you know, like, Murder, She Wrote, and, like, these other things that meant so much to gays. And I was like... How many fucking coming out stories do you think Angela Lansbury has had to hear in her, like, almost 100 years of living? That bitch was probably tired of faggots. She sees one approaching. She's like, do not bring up Cabot Cove.
Yeah.
Don't bring up, like, MAME. I've had enough.
She's like, you know, it's like the prompter and whatever. And Blythe Spirit is like, can I just have a moment to talk about how hard it was for me? She's like, I got to get this line right. And I'm wearing a turban. So let's move on.
The one thing that actually seems to light Selena up, though, is her fans. And I think by the end of it, you get to an idea that she loves connecting with people. You know, her mental health struggles are very real and sort of harrowing in the documentary. I wish we got more of them, actually. There sort of starts when she has her psychotic break and the revival tour ends in 2016. And then we sort of jump forward to, like, 2019, even post, you know, the kidney transplant, you know? So it's just sort of like you miss these large chunks and you really hear her talking about it. And there's some, you know, like, a bunch of filler where she goes back to her hometown and is, like, walking through her school and talking to, like, old neighbors and things. And I'm like, okay, that's what... an MTV interview used to be for, right? Like, that's not something that we need in a documentary on you. Let's move on from that. But there's another moment too where she's just sort of like talks about how much philanthropy sort of means to her. And I actually believe it when she says that, you know, when she's done with all of this, she's going to mostly work on philanthropy. There's actually a moment where the best moments of the documentary are where, Alex gets the moments that he got in, like, Truth or Dare from Madonna, where Selena's sort of, like, flippant with an interviewer, or she leaves an interview and she's like, that was the dumbest fucking question. Like, I hate that shit. Like, never make me do that again. You know, there's a moment where she talks about, like, I was being asked interesting questions, like the person who asks her what she'd want to do besides her career. And she says philanthropy. And then the interviewer's just sort of like, that's great. Thank you. And then Selena, like, leaves pissed off because she's like, there's no follow-up to that whatsoever. It was just like, boom, getting through the questions. And so that was interesting.
No, I like seeing that too, because I feel like a lot of people just expect these people to be perpetually quote-unquote grateful, which means you don't have an opinion about anything, basically. You just have to be up there and loving everything that happens to you. And people are unsympathetic to famous people.
Megastars.
For one thing, you know. Yes. And also just, not taking 2 minutes to think about what is actually happening to them as all of this quote unquote wonderful stuff is happening.
And also, like, even on the concept of being grateful, it's, they give us a lot too. Like, yeah, I think people underestimate how much a song, an album does for you. That's sort of why I always really get mad at, you know, like, obviously conservatives and people like that, or people who just sort of like, sort of knock like a film or a movie or an actor or like a musician. It's just sort of like, do you know how much movies and the TV that we watch and the music we consume, like, get us through our lives? It's just very weird to think of it as superfluous and just be like not grateful for what artists give us. I mean, like, you mentioned Madonna, you know, Michael, like Michael Jackson, you know, like growing up on music, listening to it every day, that does something to you. It does something to your mental health. Like, it gives you endorphins or what the fuck ever. Like, music changes people's lives. So it's very weird to then be like, well, you don't do anything for people.
Yeah. Right, exactly. No, how is it superfluous if I want to spend all my time thinking about it and talking about it and listening to it? You know, it's just like, you're right. It's more than a leisurely activity. It's like, you know, when something is the quote unquote soundtrack of your life, that's beyond meaning. That's like your way of life, you know?
Yeah. It's how you connect with your, it's like how you remember friends you have from high school. It's how people remember breakups. It's how people remember the passings of family members. Like, music means a lot. So
yes.
I connect with the thing of like, I connect with the idea that pop stars shouldn't feel like they are, should be more grateful for like the fans that they have, because they do a big service. But I will say, it's interesting seeing Selena sort of flippant and like sort of funny in this documentary, but then remembering how humorless she was during that like Saved by the Bell episode about her kidney, which didn't even make fun of her kidney.
Right. It was just a one-off joke, right? It was like one character said something and then they moved right along. It wasn't like the episode was about that.
It was about how social media helps people remember things now in the way that like they can't recall facts. And by the end of the episode, like, because all the kids' phones get taken away in the episode, by the end of the episode, like, when the school devolves in the pandemonium, someone had scrawled on the wall, like, does Selena Gomez even have kidneys?
Funny.
Yeah, it's funny. Which brings us to this week, where the most humorless people on the internet are, unfortunately, Selenators. Selenators? I never know how to pronounce that.
It's a tough word, syllabically.
Selenators?
So, yeah, Selenators? Yeah, senators with an L in there? Yeah.
Because when the documentary came out, Selena thanked Taylor Swift as, you know, being her only friend in the industry. And then Francia, the actress friend of hers who gave her her kidney in 2019, responded, interesting, on like an E! News story, and then unfollowed Selena, which I think that's so ghetto on her part, to be honest. I'm sorry. Like, publicly deciding to feud with Selena is wild to me.
And also, it's like, I just feel like it's an offhand comment. Like, maybe if she's just talking about other superstars, you know, like, you might think, oh, Selena's friends with all of these people at the top, Adele, etc. And it's just, no, really, it's just Taylor Swift. I just didn't think it was that damning a quote, or it did make me think, oh, the girl she got the kidney from, she hates her.
Okay. I mean, like, we're not all sitting around talking about Bring It On All or Nothing, Francia. I'm sorry. Okay.
She was on Grown-ish?
Yes, and Secret Life of the American Teenager, which we talked about like the other week. But come on, girl.
No, but I'm talking more about Bristol Palin on Secret Life of the American Teenager.
Exactly.
Than her, you know what I mean?
I could get sort of being upset with her if you feel like, you know, you're not getting your proper due or something. Because, I don't know, giving someone a kidney is a big-ass deal. Imagine you have a falling out with a friend who gave a kidney to. It's like, they're not talking to you anymore, but you're literally like walking, part of you is walking around inside of them every day.
You thought you were being philanthropic, but in fact, your organs have betrayed you now.
It's like Selena's Alicia Witt in Urban Legend.
A reference that should come up way more often. Did I bring up Alicia Witt just last week?
Did you? Maybe.
I'm trying to think of what the context was. With our lovely guest host, we were talking. She thought the poster behind me was Sandy Dennis. Or pardon me, she thought the poster was Cybill Shepherd. And I was like, well, Alicia Witt was great on Cybill. Anyway, you've heard backstage goss. That's what goes on backstage at Keep It.
A lot of talk about Sandy Dennis.
Yes, right. Forcing it. Jake Lacy almost had to have a conversation with us about it. Yeah.
But that moment, I found Francia's response sort of like wild. But I will say it is funny that she's picking a fight with Selena online over a kidney. It's funny, you know? And you try to make a joke about it, and Selena's fans are just they're rabid. How could you make fun of this? It's such a serious thing. It's like, she's alive.
Yeah, right. Also, to respond interesting when you are down a kidney, it's just like the gulp that you can hear as she types that.
Anyway, I think it's a funny story, but I also do think it's wild to just sort of, you know, comment interesting on the story. Go, we didn't need the beef to be public.
Yes, I'm going to say charitably, she maybe wanted us all to have a laugh, and I've got to be honest, I had one. So,
all right, when we're back, it's time for Keep It. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It. Lewis, what do you have to say about Reese Witherspoon?
Oh, that's right. I tease my Keep It. I love when I'm theatrical. My Keep It this week is about a list I otherwise support, which is TV Line did a list of the 50 best HBO characters ever. And I just want to say, first of all, there are always so many lists of TV shows or movies or whatever. Rating characters to me feels a bit more productive because it's more fun to compare them ultimately. Whereas I feel like with TV shows altogether, that's like a matter of taste. Like, why would you compare The Sopranos to Sex and the City? Like, why would you say one is better than the other? They're not the same thing at all. Whereas characters and performances, a little bit more fun to size up. You know, that's why those categories in the Oscars are the most fun.
So your mantra is characters, welcome.
That's right, which I always forget. Is that USA or TBS?
I think it's USA.
Okay, yeah, I never get it right. But on this list of the 50 greatest HBO characters ever, which, by the way, they're doing because HBO is 50 years old. I had no idea it went back that far. But Samantha Jones is number 3 on the list, and Miranda Hobbs is 30-something on the list, and Carrie Bradshaw is not on the list. We need to be reversing this narrative about Carrie Bradshaw being a, I guess, bad or selfish or whatever the narrative character is. I think she remains one of the best female characters ever and realistic. Like, people are find, like, character defects in women to be criminal, or, like, if we don't point them out, we're endorsing them, and therefore they're making us look bad because they get to be bad people and we don't want them to be, like, anyway. Carrie Bradshaw is the best part of Sex and the City. And I say this as somebody who identifies as Miranda Samantha Cusp in my personal life. I just think SJP gave a performance that was so casually dimensional. She was so born to do it. Every role she did up until that point, including the wacky character ones, were leading to this character. I really think she packs a whole bunch of crazy qualities into a character that is otherwise relatable, and she should be in the top 3 along with Tony Soprano and Omar from The Wire.
I love Carrie Bradshaw, and I think that what's interesting is I view her in the way that you would sort of view like a Tony Soprano. I mean, look, just read Emily Nussbaum's New Yorker essay about Sex and the City, which is still great to this day. But would people call themselves like, I'm a Carrie? You know, I don't think they ever mean it in the way that I mean it when I say I'm Carrie. I mean it as a person who's a writer, but who's also sometimes self-involved and also ruins relationships with men.
Right. Again, we can't help that Aiden was boring. Sorry. I know you wanted her to end up with Aiden, but I'm sorry. How many questions about carpentry do you have? Me? Zero.
Aiden was boring and an asshole.
Yeah, he had a sort
when
of...
When he took her back, really, where it just seemed like he just wanted to punish her, was wild.
Right. And then, of course, we ran into him in Abu Dhabi, which I consider the nightmare of nightmares. Like, how did my ex find me here?
But... And now he's going to be on And Just Like That, which I think I'm finally going to finish the first season. Enough people have told me that it's a enjoyable bad watch.
I think I watched everything but one or two episodes. I mean, there's truly a whole episode of that show where she's like, do I like my new amazing apartment? I can't tell, but I will return to it.
Okay. And where's Reese Witherspoon on the list?
Oh, her character is on the list and it's somewhere in the 30s. And I don't believe Nicole's character from Big Little Lies is on the list either, which upsets me.
Where's Renata?
Right. And also, that's somebody who would be reading the list, and she would be printing it out and showing it at a PTA meeting.
I don't even see Renata on this list. Wow.
Michael Osiello wants to hurt us. That's what's going on.
Also, Schillinger is 49. He's the only character from Oz on there, too.
Oh, right, right, right. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on with this list.
Well, let's start a fight. Let's get in the comments and be cruel.
Spoiler alert. Michael Osiello is our enemy now.
I'm really looking forward to that movie. I hope it's good. Ira, what's your keep it this week?
My keep it this week goes to Keep It alum Karamo.
No. I did not know we were doing this. I don't have the emotional bandwidth. Go ahead.
So he has a talk show now.
Which already I'm emotionally distressed. Go ahead.
Have you seen clips from it? It's Maury, and it's basically a Maury spinoff. Because for a period, Karamo hosted a series of Maury episodes, and now it has sort of the same font. It's on after Maury. You know, it seems like it's a successor to take over the Maury mantle. And it's very much, you know, therapy buzzwords, like accountability and, you know, like take this step with me, you know, like shit that means nothing but works for some people.
And also, it's the same variety as what he does on Queer Eye, where he's like, oh, you're feeling like you're not good at your job or you're not getting the dates you want? Well, what if you did this tightrope course? That does not help me.
Yeah. You know what helps me? When Beyonce says, release your job. Release the trade.
Yeah. Yes.
That's definitive. And it's not, you know, playing Legends of the Hidden Temple so you can get to an emotional place with your father.
Right. No. Break My Soul should be the fifth Queer Eye guy. Yes.
Although famously, I think all silver monkeys have daddy issues. But we'll get to Legends of the Hidden Temple on another show.
Wow, you really took us to the heart room with that one. Okay, go ahead.
So on his show, he invited Chef P, the pink sauce lady, as she's known. And I don't know if you know this... saga, but basically she's a private chef in Miami, and Chef P, her TikTok username, she created this sort of pink sauce, which is a lot like, you know, when you get the bottled Thousand Island sauce from like Chick-fil-A or like In-N-Out, you know, it's like that kind of sauce, but it's pink. She would put it on all her food and TikToks and really sort of like tease what does this taste like, but she wouldn't tell people what it tasted like, just that it was good, just that they'd have to buy it. So people were buying it this summer in droves from her TikTok, which is a great way to sort of like tease a business, you know? Here's the problem. She was shipping this stuff without any sort of like ice, like freezing the product or anything. Vile. And so people are getting, you know, this like spoiled shit to their home, which tasted nasty, not FDA approved. When she was accused of not doing things FDA approved, she had like another video where she was like, I'm not selling medical products, you know, like the FDA isn't involved. So this is who we're dealing with here.
This is a living poison ivy. She is, yes, like, I'm getting this venom into your home and you're going to consume it and feel awful. Go ahead.
So basically, a customer, someone who criticized the pink sauce on their own TikTok or YouTube, the pink lady accused her of like harassing her, like ruining her business, you know, by being overly critical. Karamo brings them both onto his talk show to discuss the matter. Whose side do you think he was on?
Oh my God, what?
He defends the pink lady because it's all this sort of bullshit about like, you know, not tearing each other down, you know, at the expense of accountability. Like that, I feel like is a general mantra. And I get supporting other people, supporting a small business owner, but she was shipping people rancid products. She's allowed to be dragged, you know? And the idea that, you know, basically this customer was made to feel like she was in the wrong and made Chef P a victim was so wild that the episode was pulled from YouTube.
No way.
It pulled from YouTube, wiped from the internet, and then it resurfaced on TikTok, which is kind of hilarious because there's a bunch of Gen Z people now on TikTok being like, who's Karamo?
Yeah.
And I did right. not know Valid where question. I was that removed from the general consciousness. But I will say there was the big splash for the first 3 years of Queer Eye. And now when I see a new subsequent season or like three episode thing that they filmed is on Netflix, I'm like, oh, that's still on.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's still like a sensation for whatever the millennial yeah. viewership or older than millennial yeah. viewership that watches it. But yeah. First of all, the only pink lady I support is the 70s variety act that would be on like the Gong Show. And also, of course, the Pink Ladies of Greece. Not okay. all of them, but most of them. Didi Khan, that's what I'm talking about. But yeah, what a perplexing story. Karamo, to me, has this problem of like wanting to seem not all-knowing, but like moral and not having the self-awareness to realize he's not done the math on this at all. Like he's coming to simple conclusions that miss a huge point.
Yeah. And a lot of people are tagging him, wanting a response to this episode being pulled, any sort of apology. And it's just pretending it didn't exist. So it's a very funny clip if you find it, but maddening. Because it really paints this awful businesswoman as a victim.
That's really shocking. I mean, just to be like, can you get this label right? Can you prove you're not, again, poisoning
everybody? There are misspellings
everybody?
On the label. You know, it's just, I get it. And it's all rooted in this, you know, we should all lift each other up. We should all support one another. I mean, that was the whole thing with the Sean Spicer stuff, right? On Dancing with the Ugh. Stars, you know, like we should support one another, but some people don't need to be supported. And if you want to be supported, you should like do your job correctly. I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
Not try to kill people.
Do the bare minimum of your job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sick. All right. Well, that was really, really enraging. I'm almost sorry you even brought it up, but that's a good keep it.
Thank you. Well, that's our show this week.
We ended up covering a lot, namely what's going on at the Bonsoir, which is a lot.
You know what we got to do? We got to do Keep It Live from the Bonsoir.
Is
the Bonsoir
my God.
Still around?
When you hear my version of Come to the Supermarket in Old Peking, you are going to fall out.
Listeners, if you know if the Bonsoir is still around or like what it is now in the village, please let us know. Also, I have one last parting question for our listeners. I watched Rachel Getting Married on my plane. And I, for some reason in my brain, had the notion that when she leaves the salon after the fight with her sister, that Anne Hathaway shows up with pink hair. And she does not.
Oh, no. She has the dark hair. Yeah. The kind of jagged late 90s yeah. cut. Yeah.
She does not. And then I was like, maybe my brain was crossing wires from when she dyes Kate Hudson's hair blue in Bride Wars. But I need to know if I'm thinking of another film where Anne Hathaway has pink hair, or if I'm thinking of another film where there's a dramatic pink hair reveal in it.
Yeah, I'm sorry not to be able to solve that for you. I feel like that should come really easily to me. It's not yeah. right now, but great movie. And also, Deborah Winger in that movie, unforgettable.
I feel like I'm I hope it's a real thing, and I hope it's not like that
Mandela effect.
Yeah, it's not one of those Mandela effect things, like that fake genie movie or whatever.
Yeah, Berenstain Bears spelled one way when it's not spelled that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, listeners, tell me if I'm going crazy or not.
I'll give you a head start.
Yes. We'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III
and Louis Fertel.
Our editor is Charlotte Landis, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer.
Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nara Malkonian, and Delon Villanueva for our production support every week.